Radio Reverb. The Brighton Festival's 2018. Now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018 with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is our final Brighton Festival special. We've been here during the festival live, 5 to 6, repeated 10 p.m.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and as the festival draws to a close this weekend, there's still plenty to see. And for our final show, sad face. No, but smile, because we're still looking behind the scenes at the festival, meeting some of the performers, creators, and the people who make it happen. And today, we're hearing about Shakespeare in the open air.
Exploring a fear of what lies hidden in deep waters.
Finding out about some of the festival's musical highlights from Slipstream's Mark Johnson.
And looking back at our pick of 2018's festival, along with reviews. And, well, I guess maybe we can squeeze some previews in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And I've been doing a bit of number crunching about last 3 weeks. Well, clearly I had nothing better to do with my day, which is a total lie. But I've been looking back at what we've actually done over the past 3 weeks of our Brighton Festival broadcasts on Radio Reverb. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. Far away.
45 hours of programmes.
45?
Well, three times a day. They repeated.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, technically, I'm cheating a little bit. No, well, there are 15
Here
hours.
We go.
15 hours of original broadcasting,
okay,
and then two lots of repeats. Anyway, 45 hours of festival broadcast. Nearly 90 podcasts. Do go and check out the Radio Reverb's podcast site, Audio Boom. Look for Brighton Festival. You will find them all there. And I sat there and did actually 5-bar gates for the number of guests we've had. We've had more than 106 guests. I might have missed one off. 100 plus guests.
Are you counting four when it was a quartet?
Yeah, I counted four when it was a quartet, yeah.
Okay. No, all right. Well,
come on,
you,
there were guests.
Okay.
And a huge number more voices from the Brighton and Hove community.
You didn't count the whole choir in War Requiem,
no,
though,
I didn't,
did you?
I didn't count 132 people in the choir in War Requiem. I didn't go that far. Number of times that Rebecca has had her relatives on air, 2. Number of times I've had my relatives on air, 0. Number of times I've forgotten your name, 1, which actually isn't bad over the course of 3 weeks.
Well done, Monica.
I'm quite pleased with that one. There we go. So that is the last 3 weeks of the Radio Reverb Brighton Festival show, number crunching.
So you're listening to Monica Hairnet and Bereka Bootylicious. Let's have a look at, actually, not looking back now, we're looking forward, because the Lord Chamberlain's Men are back at Brighton Festival after sell-out shows in 2017 with the Comedy of Errors. This time, the all-male company is bringing The Tempest to Brighton Open Air Theatre, where last night a sell-out crowd gathered despite the showers, and where this morning I met with Artistic Director Peter Stickney. I started by asking him about how a piece written in 1611... That's 1611,
ooh,
is still pulling the crowds in 2018.
It's a fantastic tale about power of love and the power of forgiveness, which I think in our times is a particularly useful tale and a particularly sort of apt tale. Also, there's something about seeing Shakespeare as it was intended to be performed, so with an all-male company in the open air, rain or shine. But it's certainly seeing that, and seeing it in the open air, it just really gives it something different. And you see it from a new and a fresh angle. So whilst the central themes and the centre of the play is still the same and those universal themes are still touched upon, you get a chance to reappraise it sort of almost through his eyes, actually. And the shared experience of everybody coming together in this one place without the formality of the theatre, without the lights, without the stuffiness perhaps that people might feel in the theatre, it really gives you another approach to it, another angle on it.
I have to say, I loved the fact that I could sit back and eat my tea. I was sort of eating out of my Tupperware box and having a drink or two at the back. And I also loved the fact that there was plenty of comedy in there. Now, I'd kind of forgotten how funny The Tempest can be.
So I love comedy. I think people often look down on comedy, and I think absolutely unfairly so. It's a real, real skill to be able to make people laugh. And actually, the more you can make them laugh, the more you can bring them closer to you and bring them along with your journey. And then hopefully the more you can move them later down the line in as the show progresses, that's the hope. But The Tempest is a funny play. There's lots of more serious themes there, but the characters of Trinculo, Stefano, but then just generally the humanity of the people and those situations within which they get stuck or rub up against can be funny because you can see yourself in those situations.
And there were people in the audience under the age of 10, I noted last night, who stuck there and went with it and found it funny. So how do you make it fresh for today's audience?
Despite the fact that I always approach the text in a very honest and open, direct way, and we don't throw gags or things on top of it where they're not warranted, there's a certain universality of all sorts of jokes of, say, for example, we have a moment where Ferdinand is attempting to lift a log and struggling with it, but Miranda, who actually lives on the island, who has more used to manual tasks,
more muscles, frankly
comes in and swoops in and picks the log up for Ferdinand. So we're playing there with expectations, I guess, of people's expectations of masculine strength and feminine strength, but the actual reality of the text is that Miranda has probably been gathering logs all her life and Ferdinand the prince never has touched one. So there's truth in that, but it's fundamentally silly seeing a man struggling with a log and then seeing the woman coming in and picking it up. That's just playing with those expectations, which turns things on people's heads. So that's something where we've invented, if you will, a little something. In my preparation of the cut, anything that's particularly obscure and in jokes from the 16th, or in this case 17th century, we tend to excise because they're textual references that people simply won't get. But the wordplay, the interplay, the situational comedy, that's funny 400 years ago, even if it's an ancient Greek writer 2,500 years ago, those things still are funny today, definitely.
What do you think of this space? Because is this the second or third time? The second time you've come here?
Yeah, it's our second time here, and it's an absolute privilege to play here. We get 425, I think, is the capacity, and we're mostly sold out through this run, I think almost entirely. But actually, it seems very, very intimate. Because of the way the seats rake, the audience are sort of on top of us in a really exciting way. And so for the actors, you really do get a sense of playing an intimate space in spite of the fact that there are 425 people here.
And I think those 400-odd people yesterday were all clapping along to fa-la-la-la-la, fa-la-la-la-la at the end.
Yeah, they were. It was a fantastic reception. It really, really was. And for the actors, and you can see them from having worked with them for 5 weeks in the rehearsal room, and this is our sixth week, and for the first week of our tour, to see, you can see them really become emboldened and lifted by them. And that just speaks for the connection made in this setting, but also hopefully the skill of the performers and the quality of the production, I hope, that people clapped along for a 2.5-minute song at the end of a 2-hour production.
Well, I loved it. And what the audience didn't know, probably most of them, is that you've had a bit of a rough week. So that sort of clap along was great for you because you had your costumes and your van stolen just 2 days before opening here.
Yeah. The way that we tour is we put everything that pertaining to the production, so set, costume, props, lighting, anything you can imagine that you would need to stage a production, which we spent 8 months in pre-production having handmade, so handmade costumes, bespoke sets, props, you name it. It goes into one van which tours around the country. And on Monday morning, so we're Friday now, on Monday morning, the van was stolen. And so Tuesday we arrived in Brighton at midday and built a new set, found new costumes, new props, and opened last night.
Well, I don't want to finish on a low because I want to point out the fact that, having known that before I came, but not saying anything to anybody, I sat here and I was told to report back to a friend who works at the festival. Could I notice? Did anything look? And I was like, do you know what's fabulous? I wouldn't have known had I not have known before.
That's very kind of you. Yeah, so my designer came down, a production assistant myself, and a couple of people from the festival. And it's worth saying that we've had extraordinary support from our producer, Pippa Smith, at the festival, who's been incredible. Dan and Jem have been working on site with us, without whom we wouldn't have been able to do this. And the costumes are fantastic, from Gladrags, a community costumier in Brighton, and then Harvey's of Hove. And then some stock that we have still left, just, and we've put together what I hope is a really good night. We've got really high production values, and the reputation of the company matters to me tremendously. And we absolutely don't want to cancel anything, so didn't. And second off, it's really important that we attain those really high standards, and I hope that even in our sort of darkest hours, we've been able to do that.
Well, to draw on the image that David Shrigley's used on the festival programme, you nailed it. You nailed it.
That's very, very kind of you. Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm going to leave you now because you've got some rehearsing to do for two shows today.
Yes, indeed we have. Thank you so much.
Cheers. And that's Peter Stickney there from the Lord Chamberlain's Men, talking about Shakespeare's The Tempest at Brighton's Open Air Theatre in Dyke Road today at 6:30 and Saturday 1:30 and 6:30. I think there's availability definitely at the 1:30 on Saturday.
That's a terrible thing about having their stuff pinched not once but twice.
Yeah, but the good thing that you hear out of it is everyone pulling together, yeah, and that the show must go on mentality. And really, you do not know it when you're sitting there watching
the
show.
Seams. Okay, great.
I was fa-la-la-la-ing and clapping along with the rest of them.
Great, marvellous.
The Brighton Festival 2018. Radio Reverb. The only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
So looking back at some of the guests that we've had on air, it was a very difficult pick to choose what we're going to have. So we just got for kind of a smattering across the board, really. And the lunchtime classical concerts in the Brighton Festival are a great opportunity to wind down in the middle of the day and catch some of the future musical stars of the classical world. One of this year's concerts featured Les Casper Girls. They're a French quartet playing songs of courtly love, not Courtney Love, from the 17th and 18th century Baroque era. The girls came to the studio with their instruments, including a viola da gamba and a theorbo, which is a massive lute. Here's how they sounded.
Marque que ton cœur est brutal, tu te mets toujours en colère. Marque que ton cœur est brutal, tu te mets toujours en colère. La la qu'elle ne soit pas si sévère, qu'on ne te pointe mal. La la qu'elle ne soit pas si sévère, qu'on ne te pointe mal.
That was live in our Bijou studio in Brighton Open Market. It's a very, very tiny studio. We have four of Les Casper Girls here. We have Alice, Axel, Alban and Barbara. Welcome to Radio Reverb. Tell me about the songs that you're playing, because they're not very well-known songs. So in the Baroque repertoire, we might know the work of Bach, but you play songs that are not so well-known. Why have you chosen to do that?
For a woman who knows Baroque French music, the most famous style of music, it's air de cour, which are the official court songs, like at the time of King, Sun King. And we are playing like the parallel of this air de cour, which called Brunette. It's like air with popular roots, and it's in a way more simple because it's more popular. It's for middle and upper class, not nobles. And so they talked about love, they talked about theology, and most of the time with one or two voices and with a small group of instruments to make an accompaniment for the lyrics.
When you were performing that, it lost something on radio because the two singers, there was a bit of confrontation and acting and drama. And did I hear the word colère? Colère, a bit of a fight going on.
Yeah, of course. All this song tell a story, and this story, it's a story of some Colin. It's his name, and he's living some bergère. Pastoral things. He's angry because she doesn't want to be in love with him. And this is a funny song, actually. This one is a funny song. Not all are funny, but this one, yes.
Well, so, she is in love with him, or she doesn't want to be in love with him.
She doesn't want to be, but he wants absolutely to.
Oh, it's the never-ending story of the man who wants the woman who wants nothing to do with her. It's the Me Too scenario in Baroque terms.
It's kind of that. It was really at the same time than today, and so, yeah.
Okay. Hashtag Me Too Baroque.
So I get the feeling then that when people come and see Les Casper Girls, it's a very visual experience as well as the beauty of the sound. So this is an important part.
Absolutely. We try to make alive this music as much as possible, even if four centuries are between this music and us. But we try, it's our language, so we can understand and try to make it.
I think it's probably time for another song.
Thank you.
That was lush. Not many times you have a massive lute in the studio, a huge, ginormous lute and a viola da gamba. But we also had a string quartet the other day when the Heath Quartet came in unexpectedly.
The strangest things excite you. Massive lutes.
A massive lute. I'm always excited by a massive lute and a viola da gamba. I really am.
Now, I know another thing that really excited you, and that was a tractor at the Dome, because I think this, for both of us, was like the pick of the festival.
Wow, yes.
It was a real hit, and it left anyone who witnessed it absolutely gobsmacked. It was an Australian, it is still an Australian performance created by the choreographer Lucy Guerin with live accompaniment from the Indonesian experimental duo Senyawa. And we invited the performer and musician Lorraine Bowen, better known perhaps as the Crumble Lady. I won't sing the song because it really is...
Don't, because everyone will get an earworm.
No, we're not going there. We're going to go earworm with the music of Senyawa. So to review, we invited Lorraine in to review a tractor. Here's what happened when she came to the studio to talk about it.
Hello, Radio Reverb listeners all across the world.
She's off. Lorraine has been to see a tractor at the Dome last night. That's not as in what you plough a field with, but as in attraction, which is a really high-energy dance piece. What did you make of it?
I thought it was absolutely brilliant, and everything in it was brilliant. Now, reasons to go. The Tuvan throat singing musicians, well, they carry the performance playing highly emotive drone music. Now, if you don't know what Tuvan throat singing is, of course, it's kind of singing that digs right into the throat and produces vibrational harmony, burpy noises in a kind of singing fashion like this.
Uh-oh.
I'm nearly there.
Yeah, that was not a didgeridoo in the studio.
No,
that was
Lorraine Bowen.
They are actually Indonesian rather than Mongolian.
Well, they suggested the Tuvan range to me. Now, there's also a string player in it who literally bashes this electric guitar like a drum. And in one section, he swaps the electric guitar for a flute and gets carried upside down while still playing. I just couldn't believe it. And other people were just gasping around me. So that's the music. And, of course, it's billed as a dance piece.
I was raving about it on Facebook today because they're called Senyawa. So they're an Indonesian kind of death metal stroke experimental duo. And saying, like, even if you don't think you like dance, go for the music because Senyawa,
yes,
absolutely stunning.
It's absolutely brilliant. So on the dance side, there's these sinewy, I suppose sinewy, because I've never seen sinews, I've never seen bones being kind of angled like these people. But they shake themselves and you think it's all really raw and improvised, but suddenly you see they're actually beginning to synchronise this crazy St. Vitus dance. It's like a kind of David Byrne video put into high art. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Well, there you go, Lorraine Bowen, who I think liked a tractor.
Well,
I get the impression.
I absolutely adored it. And everyone I know who went to see it was raving about it. I think it's one of those things that is going to be the kind of memorable thing about the festival that people will talk about for a long time. Absolutely incredible. But I was very disappointed. It didn't get very good houses.
Well, I think it's difficult to explain it because if you said to me beforehand, Rebecca, go along and see some Indonesian
death metal with a
accompanying
dance.
A dance company, I would have been, not sure. And yet it was so moving and troubling and intense. So it was a really great piece.
Real experience. Yeah, so that was a tractor, not as in what you drive, Brighton Dome. I have to say that was my number one festival event. It really was. But Shutdown is also amazing. Shutdown is a multi-screen video installation that's on an Onca gallery, and it features dance, more spoken word and rap, exploring masculinity and its pressures and contradictions. Created by Charlotte Vincent of Vincent Dance Theatre, it features a cast which includes local teenagers teenagers, one of whom is 16-year-old rapper Ebon Flow. Charlotte and Ebon came to the Radio Reverb studio to tell us more.
The reason I wanted to do an all-male piece is because I'm a feminist choreographer and I've always made work in a way that looks at the binary between the gender warfare, if you like, between men and women. And actually now I feel I can't any longer do that because there's a whole lot in between that is emerging. It's always been there, but the fascination around it and the discussion of it is emerging into the public sphere of discussion. So we wanted to really embrace that within this piece as well.
I want to bring Ebon in there because there's a bunch of women talking about this piece about masculinity. How was it having this feminist choreographer in charge of this? How did you think it finished up?
Yeah, well, I thought it worked quite well because it just meant it was just sort of as many different viewpoints as you can get on a matter, and that's like the best way to go about anything. So, yeah.
That was a conscious effort, actually, but Ebon's right, that the collaborators, yes, I collaborate, absolutely, I can't make my work without the brilliant people that I work with, and I think that when you get a bunch of men together, they all come with a range of sexualities, a range of experience, and in this case, a real range of age. Some of them are dads, some of them aren't, some of them are gay, some of them aren't, some of them are drag artists, some of them aren't, some of them are rap artists, some of them aren't. So that sort of mix is quite brilliant, actually, and so we all have to kind of get along and work out which stories want to be told.
So, Ebon, you were doing some spoken word in piece.
Yeah.
Would you mind giving us a taster?
Sure. So this is one called Man of the House. The man of the house stands proud. The man of the house shouts loud. The man of the house doesn't do handouts. The man of the house, he stands out. A male icon who applies a firm fist and can channel his fury whilst remaining wordless, he's Michelangelo. The house is sculpture, ready to alter his child's present and future. At least that's how they sell it. That's how they tell it. But we forget, both women and men are equally strong. Both mothers and fathers do rights and wrongs. And the man of the house does not need to strike of the speed of a praying mantis. See, our definition of that position is not set in stone or engraved in bone. Cause right now, it's a position too difficult to hold. It is clay, ready to remold. So like Donatello, we must sculpt this role to one of empathy. Reaching out with more arms than a centipede. But to even have a dad about makes me a lucky one. Remember the dads who passed the mantle to their two-month-old sons. Remember the dads who abandoned their families, leaving a young boy trying to fill a hole of tragedy. Man, that's cowardly. And of course there are reasons, but a single mother cannot provide all of a father's teachings, and a single father cannot provide all of a mother's teachings. That's just the way it is. The ugly truth's heart still beating. So, when you're the man of the house, will you remain a symbolic statue of unobtainable love? Or will you embrace your children with many a hug? Will you be a mirror, only reflecting the worst in your child? Or will you show them that laughter is contagious and you just caught smiles? So this man of the house stands out. But let's see how the next man of the house pans out.
Wow. Wow. That is...
That gave me goosebumps. And I've heard that loads of
Seriously
times.
Seriously amazing.
It's great.
Sitting here next to you doing that.
Wow, well done, Ebon.
Cheers. Ebon, what have you actually gained from being involved in this project?
Apart from going on a lot of radio.
A lot of radio time. No, but I've never been part of sort of a production with lots of other different performers, and especially with dance and that, because, I mean, I really can't dance, believe me. So that's never been something that I've been involved in. So it was just sort of interesting to sort of broaden my horizons and, create some work that focused on specific issues facing men.
As Ebon Flow and Charlotte Vincent and Vincent Dance Theatre talking about Shut Down, their multi-screen video installation at Onca Gallery, runs through till Sunday and is 12 till 6. So this is your last call to go and get that. I like you, Rebecca. I thought when Ebon Flow came in and he just did his piece, it was a wow moment.
That was my favourite studio moment of the festival, because he arrived with about 30 seconds to go before we were live on air, looking completely like, hi, here I am, what's this? Okay, sat down. And when he started with that piece of poetry and spoken word, just the atmosphere in the studio, we were all mesmerised by the young man. It was fantastic, really strong stuff.
So if you haven't yet had a chance to see Shut Down, or you've dipped into it, I've dipped into it on a couple of occasions, I've seen sort of 10 minutes of it and it's an hour long, I am going to go in over the course of the weekend, must remind myself to go and catch the whole thing for an hour and just kind of sit in there and just take it all in.
And it's also your last few days to catch Pivot on the seafront.
It is, yes. At first sight, they just look like three seesaws down by the I-360.
Indeed.
But look a little bit more closely or just listen to them, because they also communicate in their own quirky way with their riders. Pivot uses artificial intelligence to respond to riders' questions in their own quirky way, in a way that is frequently quite sarcastic as well. I went to see Pivot and I met its co-creator, Madeline Flynn.
Okay, it's a sunny day. Life is pretty good for us.
Hi, my name's Madeline Flynn and we're down at Pivot, which is next to the I-360, looking out to the beautiful sea and the incredible West Pier.
Couldn't have wished for a better day.
I know. What about this? Hello, Brighton, turning it on.
So what I can see here, three large seesaws. There's more going on than that.
Yes, physically there are three large seesaws here, surrounded by loving people, everybody riding the seesaws. Part of what happens, it unfolds the experience as you're riding the seesaw, the seesaw starts to talk to you.
Ooh.
And then you talk back. So she's semi-intelligent. Each of the seesaws have their own sort of personality. And they're, you know, a talking seesaw offers an absurdity for which many things can happen.
And what kind of conversations are people having with their seesaw?
All sorts of things. I mean, it depends on how old the person is who's having a conversation and who's on the other end. She's quite a philosophical seesaw. She has many different names. She hates being called Siri and Alexa. So the sorts of conversations that people have are about the meaning of life, where we are, what we're doing. Are we living in the sort of place we want to be living in? Are we having the sorts of relationships with people that are important? How inclusive are we about those things? They're fairly bolshy questions.
And what are you hoping people will take away from this? Because I see it's mainly children hogging it at the moment.
At the moment, it's children. Earlier on, there were a range of ages, and I guess that's a beautiful thing about being somewhere over a period of time, the flow of people who are out and about. And so we encourage everybody to come down.
So I guess a sunny Saturday today, the beach is absolutely round. Maybe come down during the week, then you can get a go and have your own conversation with the seesaw.
Absolutely, totally, Melita. We're here many, many hours, and many hours for you to come down.
I like a kind of Kate Bush style of ethereal singing. Join in when you hear it.
And that was Madeline Flynn, the co-creator of Pivot on the seafront by the I-360. So I thought I'd give Pivot a go for myself. Here's what happened. I'm sitting on a seesaw on the seafront by the I-360, and someone is having a conversation with the seesaw next to me. I'm going to try and have a conversation with this seesaw. Hello, seesaw.
Okay then. Howdy, partner. What's your name then? Speak nice and slowly.
My name is Rebecca. Hello, my name is Rebecca. Hello, my name is Rebecca.
Well, Rebecca. Nice to meet you here at last. Do you know my name?
No, tell me your name.
From what everybody has been saying, my name might as well be Poo Poo.
Poo Poo? You're telling me your name is Poo Poo?
Well, maybe a bit strange, but a great name anyway. Hooray for monikers.
So what are you doing here, Poo Poo? What are you doing here? It's not the easiest interview I've ever done this. Hang on. Hello, what are you doing here, Seesaw?
I'm waiting for my cue to sing.
Oh, you are going to sing for me.
What? I just don't know what you're talking about. Please explain.
I just don't know what to do with myself. Try that one.
Hey there, do you think that I am an echo chamber, repeating some programmed and possibly fake information that is endlessly available to me?
Possibly, yes. Are you fake? Hello? Are you fake news? You've gone very quiet. Hello? So it's a difficult interview, this. Sometimes the subject is chatting with me, and other times she's gone quiet.
Well then, take it easy, a few steps at a time. Be a tortoise, not a hare, and please negotiate with your partner when you want to hop off. Above all, talk to me.
Relaxing is something.
Okay, I should have someone on here with me. There's just me. Well, thank you for your time. Goodbye.
Oh yes, see you. Take it easy.
Bye. Well.
Howdy. Partner.
Not sure that was my most successful interview, but it was worth a shot.
Well, that was Rebecca having about as much luck having a conversation with Pivot as I have. But if you want to try your luck with Pivot, it's down on the seafront by the I-360, runs through till Sunday, 2 till 8 p.m, and it's free.
Now to a show this Saturday and Sunday at the Bright Home Centre, Bright Helm Centre even.
Put your teeth in the right way, dear.
Oh, I know, it's my age. The Cult of Water is a supernatural journey up the River Don, exploring myths and legends of our industrial waterways. It's a storytelling show accompanied by archive film, music, illustrations and candlelight. Well, David Bramwell created the show and he joins us now. So, David, the River Don is near where you grew up in Doncaster and it flows through what were British industrial heartlands of the 19th century. What is its mysterious significance for you?
That's a good question.
Well, give me a good answer.
well, Doncaster is a town like many industrial towns where it was built on the river. The Romans came. They gave the town the name Danum, which was named after Danu, which was the goddess who gave her name to the Don and also gave her name to the Danube and the Don and the Dane and many other rivers. And over the centuries, not only did we neglect our river, we canalised it, we exploited it, it was declared biologically dead for a long period of the Industrial Revolution. And for someone like me, as a teenager growing up in Donny, I was barely aware of the fact that we had a river, despite the fact that the town was formed around the river. So it was a chance for me to go back and work out what had happened to this river. And to trace the origins of Danu and find out who Danu was and how we used to worship our rivers as female deities. And while I was doing the research, I discovered, and this was one of those delights that come to you when you're looking for a story, that the Roman god of fire and forge stands on top of what was once the tallest building in Sheffield and was adopted by the Sheffield steel industry as its mascot. So you've got this male figure, this patriarchal figure of fire, responsible for killing a water deity. And so I took a journey up the Don. It's a semi-mythical journey because it's a journey back in time. Obviously, I didn't really go back in time. But I go back in time to our Neolithic period where I'm in search of Danu to kind of say sorry on behalf of all men, you know, like we messed up. But also to confront my own thalassophobia, which is a fear of deep water, dark water and shapes underneath the water. So I swim in Brighton Sea whenever it's warm, but it scares the willies
out of me. Whenever it's warm? When is that? Hang on a moment. Hang on.
Well, not yet. Usually kind of July, August, September time. But I have an anxiety about that as well. So there's also an exploration of our anxiety around large bodies of water.
But what started you off thinking, you said you as a youth you weren't aware really of the waterways there. What was the moment that you said, you know, there's something in this, I could find a story?
I became interested in water worship. I became interested in how, you know, we are an island of water worshippers, really. We live on a damp island. Water is such an integral part of growing up in Britain. And so it was, you know, starting to, because I was surrounded by that in Yorkshire and Derbyshire by, you know, well dressing. And then these stories that started coming out about how we may have once slept by our wells and springs, and they'd served as sort of oracles, and that water was this sort of divine entity that when the Romans came, they were still water worshippers. They would throw coins and swords and shields into the water. We didn't cross a body of water without paying respect to it. And then we sort of turned this whole thing on its head, where we were utterly disrespectful to our waterways. And now we've gone full circle. The show is about how we've gone full circle, and now we're cleaning up our waterways. And the areas of, say, Sheffield, not Doncaster yet, maybe never, but the areas of Sheffield that were once the most degraded, polluted, disgusting areas that I remember visiting as a kid, they're now the most valuable property because the water's been cleaned up. Everybody wants to you know, live by water, by something organic and natural. So I'm looking at this, how we've sort of gone, we're going full circle. And this coincides with maybe a fanciful, an idealistic way of looking at our future, but we seem to be heading away from a patriarchal past into a matriarchal, a more balanced future, and that seems to go in line with the way we've changed our relationship to waterways.
Well, I'm glad you can see that, because I don't feel we're going in that direction. But this also very much ties in with Brighton, because we are so in Brighton, we're so tied to the sea, aren't we? You know, our history, our trades, our tourism
absolutely
is tied to the sea. And you look at the West Pier sitting out there as a wreck, you know, very much the sea is a part of that. And we have our own hidden river as well, the Wellesbourne River Brighton, which
yes,
flows through it.
And I'll be talking a little bit about the Wellesbourne at the end. My promise where I do this show is that I'll do research into the local rivers, because every place has one. Obviously, it's helpful. I've been here 25 years, so I know a bit about the Wellesbourne. I've written about it before. So yes, there'll be some Wellesbourne fab facts at the end of the show.
So you mentioning the show there, so where did Jarvis Cocker and the author Alan Moore come into this?
I'm slightly regretting the wording of that.
Everyone's going to expect Jarvis Cocker to be
you. I know. They will only get me. I did say aided by. Now, Alan Moore, I got the chance to interview Alan last year for a radio program along similar themes, and so ended it with a 3-hour interview, and we only used about 2 minutes for the radio program. So I've taken extracts from that interview with Alan's blessing, where he's talking about water worship and his sort of angle on it. Jarvis Cocker features in a slide.
Oh, well done.
He travelled. He took a journey down the Don back in the 1970s on an inflatable rubber ring. So I was
very Michael Jackson.
So you could have called it The Cult of Sex and Water. Had you mentioned sex once during the inner slide, then?
There's quite a lot of sex in actually.
Is
When I look at the symbolism of, if you distill down our ancient symbols of the stone monolith, which obviously is pertinent to Neolithic landscape, and the well and the circle.
And
genitalia, etc. And then these symbols crop up throughout different mythological systems. So in Christianity, you've got the Spear of Destiny and the Holy Grail. In the Arthurian legends, you've got Arthur's sword, and you've got the chalice, and then you've got the Shilin of Giggs and etc. And then of course, if you distill that down to just a line and a circle, you're looking at two contrasting elements, you know, one which represents something cyclical, one which is linear, and that's binary code, and that's what runs the internet. And so we now inhabit a new, you know, mythical realm, which arguably is non-binary, despite the fact that it's run by binary code.
It's all going on in this show, actually.
It is, isn't it?
I've thought this through.
Yeah.
That's good. And I can't help noticing you just happen to have a book in front of you, The Cult of Water, hot off the press.
Hot off the press today, yes. It was a friend, Daisy Campbell, who did a one-woman show a couple of weeks ago, and she said, I presume you're going to get some books knocked up on you know, to sell at the show. And I said, no. She went, no, you ought to. You've got a lot of people coming. I said, oh, no. So she planted that seed. So I spent the last 2 weeks making this, yeah.
Great. So The Cult of Water is on Saturday, and you've added an extra show because it's sold out.
Saturday, yeah. Well, they added some extra dates for Saturday. Maybe one or two, literally one or two tickets left for Saturday, but there's a few left. There's more left for Sunday. So it's 9 o'clock at the Brighthelm Centre Saturday and Sunday evening.
Sounds fascinating. Thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. David Brownwell, The Cult of Water. And don't forget, you can check out for tickets availability on the Brighton Festival website, brightonfestival.org. And don't rely on the fact you think it might be sold out, because there are often returns for things. And also Brighton Festival on Twitter, at Brightfest.
The Brighton Festival 2018. Radio Reverb, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
Well, one of my favourite interviewees that we've had on this year, going back through all of them, and it's been very difficult to pick, but I thought I'd choose this one. It was Victoria Melody. Victoria has picked some pretty unusual subjects for her work in the past. She's included pigeon fanciers and dog shows. Possibly the most unusual is a new dark comedy created when her dad, celebrity TV antique dealer Mike Melody, was diagnosed with a terminal illness. Well, this led Victoria to organise the funeral service of his dreams, but then it all changed. And now it's the subject of the show Ugly Chief, which was on at the Open Market. Sorry, the Old Market in Hove.
Fussy, go on then, put our minds at rest. Your dad, Mike, is actually not dead.
Yeah, Dad is alive and he's in the show. He was diagnosed with a terminal illness. He was given around 5 years to live, and he asked me to organise his funeral because they thought he had motor neurons disease, basically. And after about a year, the doctors contacted him because he wasn't getting getting any worse.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we've misdiagnosed you. Well, you are going to die one day, but not yet. But it's basically a trapped nerve in the neck, which is very different to a terminal illness.
Sure. So was it as much of a shock to him to realise that he was going to live as it was to, that he was going to die?
He basically, he lost a lot of weight. He, get, you know, on purpose, you know, going on a diet, eating healthily. He gave up smoking. He gave up drinking. He started exercising for the first time. And so he actually felt the best he'd ever felt. So when he got the diagnosis, obviously it was a huge relief, but he was, he'd never felt better. Dad is quite a character. He is an antique dealer and he's been on television. He's been on shows like Dickinson's Real Deals. And I'm a, you know, I'm a performer and a comedian and I write and perform in theatre. So we're both show-offs, basically. And so the comedy comes from, because he's in the show, comes from that real daughter-father dynamic. You know, one of the things I was saddest about was when he had his diagnosis, his terminal diagnosis, was I thought, we've never collaborated, you know, and we're both a pair of show-offs. Why haven't we, you know, made something together? So as soon as he was given the all clear, I said, do you want to collaborate and make a theatre show out of this?
Wow.
And he, yeah.
So your dad actually performs on stage with you in this?
Yes, and he's not, although he does television, he's not a trained theatre performer or anything. To be honest, he's an absolute loose cannon. Which is wonderful for the audience, painstaking for me.
Has this brought you and your dad closer together, or has it driven you apart?
Oh, because we argue a bit and stuff, it's brilliant to see that on stage, but the process can be a bit annoying sometimes, because it's a dynamic change. It's a daughter telling a dad what to do, and he's stubborn, you know, so it hasn't always been that rosy in the rehearsal room. But ultimately, it has brought us very, you know, it's been a very bonding situation.
So I guess this is a show which is for anybody who's got family, really, because I guess at the heart of it is an exploration of family relationships that don't always go smoothly.
Yeah, you know, relationships aren't always beautiful, are they? And smooth.
And just not in families.
No. And it's very funny, but it's also, it is moving, because we haven't always got on. Yeah, ultimately, it's a show about mortality as well. And, you know, it's a living eulogy.
She's a character, isn't she? That's Victoria Melody talking about the show Ugly Chief. That was on at the Old Market in Hove during the Brighton Festival. Didn't get a chance to see it, unfortunately. It was on for one night only. I hate it when something's on for one night only because it's really frustrating. You can't get to see it. Anyway, I heard it was very good. It doesn't surprise me.
You can't see everything,
Anita. I know. I'd love to be a hologram.
Fortunately, because we can't see everything, we've been relying on Mark Johnson from the Slipstream show to see quite a lot of the marvellous music that's been on offer. So Mark has kindly joined us in the studio to talk through some of your highlights. So where would you start on the sort of walkthrough of what's happened?
Well, first of all, it's great to be here and brilliant show. Enjoyed it. The days I've heard it, it's been fantastic.
Thank you, Mark. So, we've loved your pieces.
We
as well.
Have absolutely loved your pieces.
Your pieces are a bit of a kind of oasis of calm in the programme, because the programme's been quite sort of, you know, revolving door of guests. Yeah. And sort of manic is possibly not too fine a word to put on it. So your lovely pieces, your interviews, your previews have been a nice oasis of calm.
Right.
Anyway, enough of the self-congratulations. Okay, tell us about what you liked at the festival.
Well, I haven't seen as much as I wanted to, due to my work commitments, but one of the
Leave
things
the
I
job.
Saw I have, that's the problem. One of the things I saw which really surprised me was a band called Jungle. Which
well, that was right at the start of the festival,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. And I have to say, this wouldn't normally be my sort of thing, but I have to say they were absolutely brilliant. They've had music in the chart, and I was expecting to be the oldest
it's
person
quite poppy.
There.
It's very poppy.
Yeah, very poppy, very charty sort of stuff, but they were really good. Great stage presence, great light show, great sound. So it got off to a good start.
Even for old guys like you?
Yeah, well, it turned out I wasn't the oldest there. So. I think there was a guy in row two that was... No, it was very good. They were very good. Almost like a slightly modern-day Elements of Chic to them, I felt. I think the nicest person I've interviewed was John Sermon.
Love that interview, that's great, yeah.
Spoke to him, like, really early in the morning in Oslo, and he just couldn't be nicer. Such a top professional guy. And I know Jack went to see John Sermon.
Yes,
and
our other reviewer, yes, Jack went to see him.
And he said
yeah.
it was fantastic. So, yeah, that was great. The Miles Davis thing that was on the Saturday.
Yeah, that's really one good. I would have really liked to have gone to. Yeah,
I couldn't go to the thing in the afternoon, but I went to the gig in the evening. And I also interviewed Dave Akumu. They played sort of Miles Davis music from the 70s. And it was just absolutely fantastic.
It's a kind of recreation, a reinterpretation.
Yeah, a reinterpretation, really. You know, full-on band, two drummers. The sound was great in the church, and musicianship was fantastic. And again, speaking to Dave Akumu, who's got a tremendous track record in music, he was really great. Interesting fact about Dave Akumu, he was actually electrocuted on stage.
Not in Brighton, I hope.
No, this was in, I think it was in Nigeria.
Wow.
And if it wasn't for a quick thinking of a band member, he would have died. As the electric current went right through his muscles and broke his legs.
Good grief.
Whoa. So it's a really shocking story.
You don't get that
story.
Kind of thing at St. George's Church, do you?
No,
hopefully.
No, we got health and safety.
Health and safety.
But I think the best thing really was the Kronos Quartet. I think the thing about the festival, as well as being entertaining, I think the festival is I can't think of the word now, educating, if you like.
Okay.
And I learned a lot about the Kronos Quartet, which I didn't know, and there was a fantastic film on about them, about their 45-year, you know, career in music. There's some great little clips in there.
And they trailblazers, kind of, aren't they? In their
style.
Yeah,
yeah. Redefine really the what we think of as a quartet, you know. So they're a string quartet. They're absolutely tremendous. And then in the second half of the evening, they had this trio from Mali called the Trio de Cali, which they've produced an album, which was one of last year's biggest selling albums in the world music scene.
Nice.
They were absolutely fantastic.
Just briefly, because we've got so much to pack into the show.
Sorry, yeah.
You talked about education in the festival. Now, Melita and I were talking earlier about the fact that the diversity of content across
lots of black performers, LGBT performers,
lots of stuff, and also in the musical front. I mean, we've had Cypriot, we've had traditional jazz, we've had Amazonian. Yeah. It's stunning, isn't it? And that's education, but it's entertainment education.
Exactly. Nakane, fantastic artist, South African singer, got a great future. We're going to hear a lot more from him. He's part of the Xhosa community in South Africa, where it's not totally accepted yet to be gay, but has come out and is a great trailblazer, you know, fantastic artist.
Which gives me an opportunity to play Nakane in the background.
Yeah. Mark Johnson, thank you for coming in. Thank you too.
But,
when can we hear Slipstream and people can hear more of you and your amazing music?
1 o'clock Saturdays, Slipstream Worldwide Beats.
Mark Johnson, thank you very much for your contributions to the Brighton Festival Show. It's been a delight and a pleasure. Cheers. We can only squeeze in the introduction of Nakane. Good as he is, you're going to have to go away and listen to Nakane yourself.
Do you know what? I love the fact that we're doing that to make way for my mum.
Yeah.
Because one of my favourite things this year has been calling upon my family to help out with the show. Apologies to Nakane. Hello, mum. I took my mum along to see Rearview. It was a sellout success the first weekend of the festival. And to Melita's surprise, I took one of my nephews to a festival event as well. Tim Martin came into the studio to review Life Model 2. So, mum, we have just had a little stopover before we go to do a Rearview. I say do because it seems it's a bit more active than expected. What are you expecting from Rearview?
I haven't got a clue. Sorry.
You haven't got a clue?
I think it sounds a bit like a tourist sort of, you know,
naff sort of thing, but it should be fun.
And were you aware that there's a life drawing beforehand?
No.
Are you going to be drawing?
Probably not, but I shall have a good look at what the others are drawing.
So I have before me a real kind of cynic. You think it's going to be naff, and you think you won't draw?
No, I think it's going to be great fun, because we've got wonderful weather for it. We're going to see some of the beauties of Brighton, and it'll be interesting to see what these ladies come up with.
We will see. Okay.
We will.
Well, afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the life drawing class. How many of you have never been to this session before?
Well, Rebecca, okay, I can't believe your mum went to something without even knowing what she was going to.
She did. She's such a cheeky person. We picked it together, honestly. I don't think we were that clear that there was a life drawing class. Another thing that works well on radio, I bought what we did at the life drawing class. Here's my attempt at drawing the model, which you're welcome to tweet that as well.
I will, don't worry.
Here's my mother's.
Your mother's is blank.
Yes.
She didn't do anything.
No.
She's naughty.
Well, no, you don't have to do these things. You know, everything is voluntary.
It's a Cagean statement.
Well, exactly. She was watching what was going on.
Brighton Festival 2018.
I had my nephew, Tim Martin, with us.
Hang on a minute. You already brought your mum in, who went to see Rear View with you. Now you're bringing your nephew in. Is this the Rebecca Sandals family show or something?
It's the family business. It's a family business, yeah.
Pushy aunt, pushy daughter, I see.
Keeping it in the family. Yeah. No, it's I don't have any friends, so I have to kind of bring my family along to go out and see things with me.
Well, Tim, welcome to Radio.
Hello.
Thank you very much for coming along with
us.
Thank
you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Let's start with life modellers. David Shrigley is the festival's director. This is his giant, plastic, shiny, naked, pink female model at Fabrica. What did you make of it?
Well, I thought she was quite fabulous, actually. I mean, a body to be envious of course. But not so sure about the hair. But...
slightly out of proportion as well.
Oh, yeah, possibly. I mean, who wouldn't love those eyes?
Did you do your own picture?
I did indeed. I sort of tried to keep it as sort of within the parameters of Shrigley as I could, using just a Sharpie for it.
So, Rebecca, what was your offering like? Because we did actually see your artwork when you did some life drawing last week.
I knew you were going to ask.
Which was frankly appalling.
Fabulous.
Well, okay, look, I think I've sent you a picture of what I did.
Can you tweet it, please?
All right, I will tweet it in a bit.
And shame yourself publicly to the world.
Shall we say that Tim's piece did look like the model's bottom, because we were doing the derriere of the life model. Mine, I made up for the lack of composition talent, okay, by adding a lot of crayon in colour and the word BUM.
Yes, and you can see Rebecca's artistic talents floating around the internet on Twitter. That was Rebecca and the Rebecca Sandals family show here on Radio Reverb.
Someone who's not in my family and who came in to see us is the chief executive of Brighton Festival, Andrew Comburn. And he came into the studio at the end of the first week of the festival, if I remember rightly. And we started by asking him what David Shrigley's tenure as the guest director had brought to the table.
There's such a sort of wry take on life, isn't there, from David, a sardonic humour, which is very British as well. It's really interesting to have all of this international work then seen through a very British lens of Shrigley, and always slightly subversive, undercutting your expected take. There's lots of absurdity running through. I mean, I think the fact that we had a Belgian rock balancer for 5 days balancing human-sized rocks on the seafront is kind of the definition of absurd, really. But then how that becomes incredibly moving and contemplative. You know, there was a woman I spoke to who spent 5 hours watching those rocks being balanced and thinking about where she was in her life and what she was then going to do. You know, it was this moment of real contemplation and thoughtfulness that came out of something that is inherently ridiculous. And I love that about the festival. I think that's kind of almost a definition of it.
This year, there seems to be more LGBTQ content than in previous years. And people have quite often said, you know, oh, Brighton is such a queer town. Where's all the queer stuff in the festival? And I'm really impressed by the range and diversity of LGBTQ content this year.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Particularly from trans voices. I mean, things like Brighton Abbey and Travis Alabanza, really wonderful artists and incredibly powerful stories that, you know, the thing that really made it so special from my point of view about Adam is that we have documentaries and political kind of treaties about trans. Rarely do we get to connect on a direct emotional level with another human being and their experience, and I think Adam does that so profoundly.
And I think the common humanity in Adam was really what came out. And also, totally. Seeing how many young people there were in the theatre, I said when I reviewed it that I thought that was the youngest audience I've ever seen there. So, you know, connecting with different audiences as well.
Hope so.
I'm going to go on the commercial side of things because it seems that there are a lot of sellout shows again. I mean, this weekend a lot. You've got the Fringe getting bigger every year alongside you. How long can Brighton keep going with this May extravaganza of shows and the ticket sales?
And Great Escape.
And Great Escape and everything supporting itself financially.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think we have to be really mindful of that. There's a balance in it. Certainly within the festival itself, we're really aware of having to balance an economy. Ultimately, we want people to experience a lot of the festival and not just one or two headlines. We try really hard to keep the tickets priced so that you can do more than just one thing. Really pleased that on average people do four or more events in the festivals.
And that doesn't take in them doing free events, presumably, because you don't know they've been and done that. Yeah.
But I think it means we do have to be really careful about the balance and talk a lot between ourselves, between the Great Escape, between the Fringe and the festival, and trying to think about how we pitch that best. It can't be an ever-increasing thing, but in some ways the geography of the city helps us. Even though it can be tricky to find places for things, it's also a kind of an automatic restriction on the scale of stuff. So you can't just expand forever and ever. And I think there's something probably healthy about that.
Do you know who's the director next year yet?
Yes. Cheeky.
Yes. Okay. Is it...
Cheeky question. I didn't know she was going to slip that in.
Oh, well, you know, he's here.
You can try, Rebecca.
I know. Well, I know people and I never find out ahead. So I know I could probably do horrible things to parts of your body and you still wouldn't tell me who was going to be director next year. But you're looking very happy about it.
Yeah, look, I think it will be great. But I love
about
that.
About her, him, them.
I think it will be great. And
She's trying.
What I love about the guest director is it's an opportunity to talk about the festival in a completely different way each time. And that is the challenge from my point of view, to see what new direction can we take it in next year. So we will be taking a new direction, I can tell you that.
Great. But that's the thing, is when is the downtime for this festival organisation?
No downtime, but in a way that's a great thing. And we juggle it across the team. It's a fantastic team.
There you go. Andrew Conbin, Chief Executive of Brighton Festival, teasing us to 2019. It's going to be fantastic. It's going in a different direction. It sounds exciting.
Can't wait.
Radio Reverb. Brighton Festival 2018.
Well, you've been listening to the Brighton Festival 2018 special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM DAB and online Monday to Friday 5 to 6pm during the festival, repeated 10pm.
I can't believe we've actually come to the end of it. And now I want to thank today's guests, Mark Johnson, David Bramwell, Victoria Melody, Rebecca's mum, Rebecca's nephew Tim, Andrew Conbin, Lorraine Bowen, Charlotte Vincent, Ebb and Flow, Leg Capsper Girls, Peter Stickley and Jack Clarimont and Megan Clifton. And a massive thanks as well to Radio Reverb's Ant Martin, who's pulled together all the podcasts from the past three weeks.
Yeah, great work, Ant. Thank you.
Yeah, so there's around about 90 podcasts. You'll go to Audio Boom, look for Radio Reverb Brighton Festival Special, and you'll find complete programmes and clips of all these interviews as
and
well.
And a huge thanks to all of our listeners and to all of the contributors, all of the actors, performers, directors who've come into the studio. Thank you.
And a big thanks to you two as well.
Oh,
fantastic.
Thank you, Mark. It's a big thanks, Ian, isn't it?
Thanks all round.
Yeah, but you know, our listeners have been amazing and the guests from the festival have been absolutely fantastic. So I hope we've given you an insight, an exclusive behind-the-scenes peep into the Brighton Festival for 2018, which has inspired you to go and see more kind of art, culture and other exciting things happening in the festival and beyond, of course, because I'm going to be back on Thursday
with my regular show, arts, culture, what's on, things that interest me in Brighton here on Radio Reverb. So from me, Melita.
And me, Rebecca, I'm going to go and have a lie down for about 12 months till we do it again, maybe.
I'm going to have a beer for 12 months. We'll see you all. I'll see you on Thursday and we'll see you again next year. Thanks for listening. Bye.